Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt cordially invites you to take tea with her today in the Park Sheraton Hotel's Colonial Room in New York. The discussion will deal with the question, is the tax system in the United States unfair? Mrs. Roosevelt has asked Roy Blau, professor of economics at the University of Chicago, and Leo Chern, executive secretary of the Research Institute of America, to discuss with Miss Vivian Kellams, Connecticut industrialist, and Miss Gloria Swanson, well-known actress, the pros and cons of the present tax system. And now, here is Mrs. Roosevelt.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. I'm glad to welcome you all again today, and I want to introduce to you at once our two lady guests, Miss Vivian Kellams of Connecticut, famous for her controversies, let us say, with the government, and Miss Gloria Swanson, our movie star, who has also some ideas on taxes. I'm so glad you're here, Miss Swanson. You've just come.
Yes, I just arrived from California. I went there for 2 weeks, Mrs. Roosevelt, and I stayed almost a year.
Well, you just finished a picture.
Yes, Sunset Boulevard.
And that'll be on next summer?
Yes, not in August sometime.
And it's a long while since you've made one.
10 years. Yes, that is a long time.
That is a long time. Now I want to introduce the two gentlemen tax experts who have come to discuss with our ladies these difficult questions. Mr. Blau, you've gone back to academic circles, but you did have a good deal to do with the drawing up of these laws when you were assistant to the Secretary of the Treasury.
Well, I was there when it was going on.
You were there when it was going on. So we will accept the fact that you know a good deal. And, of course, Mr. Leo Chern, who is, I suppose we could say that he was interested in all research, being with the American Institute of Research, but he has to know about taxes, too, don't you, Mr. Chern?
Well, I tried to a little.
You tried to. Well, now, I think the public knows that Ms. Kellams has been carrying on a dispute with the government, both on withholding taxes and on excise taxes. And I think probably the public has read in the papers, as we have, that you have just won an opportunity to sue the United States government and the Collector of Internal Revenue in the state of Connecticut, Miss Kellams. Now, I think perhaps you'd like to begin this, being the lady on the program, and say what you feel about the withholding tax, and then perhaps begin on your points that you specially want to make.
Yes.
So, Miss Kellams.
Thank you, Mrs. Roosevelt. I think I should say in the beginning that much misunderstanding has arisen of the position that I took, because many people in our country do not understand the function of a test case in our legislative process. As you know, Congress can pass all of the laws that it wishes to. The President may sign all of the laws that he wishes to, but no law is a valid law in our country until it has been declared constitutional by the Supreme Court. Any citizen doubting the constitutionality of a law has the right, and in my opinion, the duty, to break the law in order to provide a test case. That is all I did. At the same time that I broke the withholding tax law and asked for a test case, Mr. Philip Murray broke the Taft-Hartley law, the publicity provision of the Taft-Hartley law, you remember. He was immediately indicted and rushed through the lower courts so fast that Justice Felix Frankfurter accused the lower courts of collusion. I broke the law and asked for a test case, but Secretary Snyder has refused to indict me, although he has been told that if he does, I will immediately start collecting the taxes pending the outcome of the suit. Now, I felt that little explanation was in order.
Well, you must realize, Miss Kellams, that if everybody who challenged tax law refused to pay the taxes, we'd have very few taxes collected.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Blau. I have not refused to pay the taxes. All of the taxes are paid, not only by myself and my brother, but all of my employees. There is no money due the government.
Well, I wonder if I might take exception to one of the statements you made. Miss Kellums. It isn't true that no law is a valid law until the Supreme Court has said that it is. Our system of law and government is based on the concept that a law is valid and should be obeyed until the Supreme Court, or unless the Supreme Court, says that it's not a valid law. Now, that doesn't eliminate your perfect right, which you've accepted time and again, to challenge one law and another, as you're doing this time. I'm confident, incidentally, and I have a hunch you're equally confident, that the Supreme Court will tell you at the completion of your case that your suit was not adequate and that the law is quite constitutional.
You don't want me to lose my case in advance, do you, Mr. Chern? I will make no such concession.
May I be honest with you? I'd like to see you lose the case, and I have no doubt that you shall.
Oh, no, I think not, because the law is so un-American and so constitutional that even the present Supreme Court could not hold the law constitutional.
Well, now, let's see whether that's so. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has already held that the government has the right to use businessmen as tax collectors for
the
government.
That is not the point I'm making, Mr. Chern. I'm so sorry, but you misunderstand me. I didn't bring up the points, Mrs. Roosevelt. Pardon me. Point number one, this law takes private property without due process of law. When a government agent may walk into a bank and take from the private account of a citizen who has never been appointed a tax collector money for taxes that are already paid, I doubt if the Supreme Court is going to hold that constitutional. That is what happened to me twice.
I'm a little confused. How do you pay that twice? I mean, in what way had you already paid your tax?
Each individual employee, Mrs. Roosevelt, pays his or her taxes quarterly, instead of having it taken out of the pay envelope each week in advance, which is also unconstitutional because it's discrimination. The taxes are not due until each quarter. But with the very first pay envelope, beginning in January, the tax is taken from the person unfortunate enough to be paid weekly or monthly. I pay my taxes quarterly, and I have an idea that you do too.
Ms. Kellums, there are many injustices in the tax law, but as I recall the origin of this particular provision, I recall the arguments that Beardsley Rummel used in advancing the desirability of withholding. It seems to me that the convenience of the employees involved in the tax was one of the very great reasons for the enactment of that particular provision. Is that correct,
Mr. Blau? Yes, that's right. There were a number of reasons why withholding was enacted, but the principal reason was to make it easy for a worker to pay his taxes so that he wouldn't be up against the problem of having to dig down into his pocket and pay either once a year or four times a year.
Oh, I'm so sorry to disagree with you, Mr. Blau. That was not the reason the law was passed.
Well,
it was passed as a war measure in order to collect taxes conveniently during the war. But the law said specifically that this method of collecting would cease with the cessation of hostilities.
Oh, but it did not.
Now, just a moment. Oh, yes.
Oh, no, it is
not.
Oh,
I'm so sorry, but it did.
But it did
and
not.
And furthermore, may I go back? Let's go back to the original income tax amendment. Withholding was held constitutional, you may remember. It was in the original withholding tax law, not the amendment, but in the law. And it was held constitutional, withholding, by the employer. But the law was so unpopular that a Democratic Congress repealed it in 1917, just before we were going into the First World War. Now, are we to sacrifice fundamental American principles for political expediency?
It's a fundamental American
principle to receive what you earn.
Ms. Kellums, I wonder if we couldn't see this in a little better perspective if we viewed your objection to the withholding taxes in terms of your long-standing objection to taxation. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, you're quite wrong.
Well,
I do not object to taxes,
May I complete my statement, Ms. Kellums, before you tell me I'm wrong? My recollection is that in 1943, which is during the war, you were urging businessmen throughout the country not to pay their income taxes.
No, that is not true. Never did I make such a statement, and never have I refused to pay taxes.
Well,
I
can't
help what newspapers say.
Well, I recall a federal judge, as a matter of fact, in a suit in which you were involved.
No, I had no suit. Oh, no, there was never any lawsuit.
Well,
certainly not.
Didn't you sue
for libel? No, I didn't
sue. CIO?
No. Oh, CIO, I sued, but not for libel.
Well, I recall that the judge in that particular case said that he must have been misinformed.
That taxes that you had nothing to do with it.
That you were counseling, that the judge said that you were counseling that taxes not be paid.
I think
you are misinformed.
I know,
well,
we get straight.
I withdraw that if I'm misinformed.
But please be assured, I have never refused to pay a tax.
Oh, I'm certain of that, Ms.
And
Duff.
I do not, I believe...
You refuse to pay these taxes.
No, I...
Withholding
every tax
tax.
Is paid. No, I refuse to collect, Mr. Bauer.
Well, but the withholding tax
no,
is
the
also
taxes
by
are
law
paid.
Against you.
No, but the taxes are paid.
But
the taxes
but
have been
paid. Till quarterly.
They're paid quarterly, but the government has said that there is no interest due.
But there is a legal liability on the employer to pay the tax. It is
yes,
the employer's
it's
tax.
Oh, that's one of my points, Mr. Brown. That's now, one of my points.
Fine, but it is
my
the law.
My point is that it is unconstitutional and un-American to make one American citizen responsible for another American citizen's taxes.
Now, may I answer
no,
that
I,
point,
No, I just
Ms.
haven't
Cullen.
Got all the point quite.
Oh, I see.
May I?
Here, both her points.
Yes.
And
then, if I may be made responsible for a man's taxes simply because he happens to work for me, the next step is to make me responsible for John the Barber's taxes because he has his barbershop across the street from me. One is just as logical as the other. My employees are American citizens. They're perfectly capable of paying their taxes and do it. They should be made responsible for mine. It works the same way. But it goes a step further. It makes the bank responsible for my taxes, because if I don't pay, they can walk in and take the bank's money. Not my money, the bank's money. I consider that un-American.
Well, that has been going on. That has been going on since 1862.
We women have to stick together here, Mr. Duff.
I want to hear your last point, because
yes.
then you wouldn't step
Well,
down
he didn't let me finish, in which I said that it takes private property without due process of law, because the government assessed a fine against me of close to $8,000, and they walked into the bank and took the money without a charge being preferred against me, and the taxes are paid because I have a letter from the Collector of Internal Revenue telling me this is for penalty only. Now, that is taking my private property without due process of law.
But that's been going on ever since taxes were ever introduced
doesn't
into the
make
United
it right.
States.
No, well, I'm sorry, but it doesn't make it right. There are lots of things going on
well,
in
Ms.
this country that
Ms.
are not
Kellum,
right.
One of the disadvantages of saying anything in favor of taxes or in favor of a specified form of tax collection is that in the process, I'm sure you forego the popularity of many people. No one likes taxes. I don't like them any more than you do. But we do face this certainty. That in the case of using one individual to collect the taxes for another, we've been doing that in the case of the Social Security taxes for quite a while now.
Yes.
You're
and
compelled to collect the Social Security
it's
taxes
It's called a contribution,
your...
too, which is most amusing, isn't it?
But
you try not contributing and see how far you
made
get.
Your
no,
point?
I haven't. This is the other one that I tried to say. We got off of this a little bit. No one should pay an income tax, $1 of an income tax in this country, until that person has received at least $600, because we have a $600 exemption. Is that correct? We have a $600 exemption.
The exemption is $600.
Yes, but with the very first paycheck, beginning in January, they start taking money from that person, and many people do not earn $600 during the year, but the money is gone. I have a letter from a poor little man in Seattle who has cancer. And he earned only $240 in a year, and he's trying desperately to get the money back.
There's
and
no problem.
Now you must answer, because in a minute you'll be off.
Well, it's very simple to get the money back. All he has to do is file his return, and it comes automatically. Many people already have their checks back for this year.
Well, but he's been trying for 3 years. He worked in three different places, and they've given the poor little man a runaround. And he wrote me the letter and asked me would I try to get his $23 or whatever it is for him.
Ms. Kellums, your suggestions remind me of a tax situation I found in Japan when the War Department asked that I go there to devise a new and democratic tax system for Japan. This was shortly after our victory. I found in Japan their method of collecting taxes was to have the tax collector get together individually with each taxpayer and by conversation with him decide how much he thought he owed, and they'd reach some kind of feasible compromise. And it turned out by some ironic process that the wealthier taxpayers never seemed to, in this process of compromise, never seemed to pay very much. Now, we have
that
tried
sort of
to devise...
That goes on in this country, too, Mr. Churn. There's plenty
well,
of that
I,
with the income tax today.
I, frankly, there are many things wrong with our tax system. But I quite honestly feel that the particular objection you've raised
is
the least valid of any criticisms that can be made
all,
of our tax system.
They're all valid.
On that note, we will have to leave Ms. Kellums for a minute and go over here to our other lovely lady, because we have to get her point of view, too. very happy again to introduce you, Miss Swanson, because now, Mr. Chern and Mr. Blau, will you come over to us, too?
Gentlemen, where are your black mustaches? Don't you think you ought to have those great villainous things?
Miss Swanson, I know you've been listening to all this, but you've got some special ideas. Will you go ahead and give us yours and let them out?
Well, I don't know how special it is, Mrs. Roosevelt. I imagine that there are other people in the same boat. And, of course, we all want to pay taxes. And I imagine when these tax laws were made, it seems to me I even remember when they were made. Yes, it
I
is a good
that.
One. Oh,
I
thank you
that.
Very much. That it was meant for to be just and equitable for everybody. But somehow, I hear people talking about corporations and the exemptions that they have and depreciation because the building is falling to pieces. Well, here's my little company right from here to here, and I think depreciation should be allowed.
But you haven't depreciated.
What? I haven't depreciated? Well, I feel as if I have when I run upstairs and run around the block. Oh, yes.
You just haven't.
Well, you see, don't you think a grandmother ought to be allowed some depreciation?
Well, I think grandmothers are allowed a great deal of depreciation, but you just haven't taken any advantage of it yet.
Now, just how does he mean that, Mrs. Roosevelt, to imagine? I think that's a compliment. But you can take your black mustache off now.
All right.
No, but truly, you see, that's all there is to me. And when it happens that, now this is, of course, another point. But as you grow older, it seems to me, especially single women, ought to be allowed, a little more deduction. Not that I don't want to pay taxes, I do, just like everybody else. But you see my work? Now, it's a precarious
condition. What you really mean is that artists have a shorter span for earning.
Yes,
and
that's
therefore,
quite right.
It should almost be a capital deduction.
Quite right, Mrs. Roosevelt, because, for instance, one year you might have a great success, and then for 10 years you might not. Or you might have 2 or 3 years of... careers are very precarious. You never know what's going to happen.
And all of the income you make in the 1 year in which you have the great success is taxed at the high rates in that 1 year.
Of that 1 year.
That's a very valid complaint. I don't know about the depreciation. It'd be pretty hard to calculate the depreciation point, but I think
why not? Don't you think that I have more earning power as a younger woman than as an older woman?
But you never can tell. Until it's all over.
You just completed a picture, which I understand is an extremely good one.
Yeah, now you asked me what happened in the interim.
But the point about the interim, I think that's the point is very well taken, that the problem of averaging the income over a period of years...
Now let me ask... Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Well, you didn't.
Professor.
Oh, come now. That just kills it.
No, it doesn't. And of economics, too. I must see you sometime, and I want you to tell me how to save
the economics.
Yes, I certainly do. My family would appreciate it if you tell me. But now let us take my position of, let us say, if I were a company, and my company was not doing as well this year as it did last year, I might go out and hire somebody as a, public relations man to help me... inject that company into publicizing it and making more money. Now what happens with me? I had to do that public relations job during the period in the interim in which I wasn't working. Well, I can't take that. I can't give myself a salary.
Well, I think Mr. Blau will readily concede that the problem will be...
Why don't you write some new laws?
Well, he gave up writing law several years ago and he went back to the University of Chicago.
I interrupted
just
you.
Just talk. No, I was going to say that I think Mr. Blau will agree with me that the problem of the artist is a very special one, and that it's unfair to tax a substantial amount of income in 1 year when he will probably or may go without income for 2, 3, or 4 years after that. Actually, the tax laws have tried to correct that for some people. For example, if an author works on a book for a period of 3 years, then the book's published and earns a great deal of income in the fourth year. Well, all of that money will not be taxed in the fourth year. He may spread it over the period of time on which he worked on the book. Same is true of an attorney who works on a tax problem such as yours for several years.
And if you worked on a movie for several years...
Yes,
the
but
same...
we don't, you see. Now, I think that was the case. The first authoress allowed that, I believe, was Miss Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind. Isn't that one of the test cases?
That was one of the cases.
Yes.
I think it was an Edna Ferber case, as I recall.
Oh, was it?
Gave rise to the statute originally.
Yeah.
But you see, in our case, we may make a picture, as I did Sunset Boulevard, in 3 months. And, of course, the entire income for that was derived in 49. And Now this is 1915.
Well, isn't it true, though, that many of the studios pay the actors and actresses on an annual basis? In other words, they're not paid per picture. They're paid a certain salary each year, so that whether they make one picture and are successful or five that fail.
Yes, but I don't come within that category.
And well, there are a good many people that aren't able to have it applied to them, stage as well as movie performers. There, of course, has been a lot of talk about getting a change in the law and getting some averaging of income over a period of years into the law. I certainly think it would be a very desirable thing. Nobody has discovered an easy way of doing it, because if you do it for the artist, the dividing line between artists and other people is rather difficult to draw sometimes. Everybody
that
would want it, and then you would have a very difficult
and
administrative
problem.
Of course,
abuses to those kind of things, too. But I know that originally when the laws were made, they were probably made with the idea of it being equitable for everybody. But when you generalize, it's very difficult.
Well, I think here's what happens, that when a tax law is passed, whether it's originally or now, they try to make it equitable for a great many people. But I think inevitably you'll have very substantial injustices for special cases. Then the tax law is amended to try to take care of the special case. And you'll find that when that's amended to take care of a special case such as yours, there are injustices elsewhere that are produced by the amendment. Now, that doesn't make your complaint any less real. And I think you're right, incidentally. I agree with you.
Well,
I think you're right.
I believe that they've been trying for the last 3 years to make some changes for the artists. I believe the Screen Actors Guild has tried desperately for 3 years. Now, I would be a very good guinea pig for many reasons.
Well, I know of no one.
Why don't you testify before the Ways and Means Committee?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps I'll have to do that, because certainly I have been in pictures for a long, long time, and my case is maybe not the usual one, but I do sort of represent in some way the motion picture business. And I have made one picture in 14 years. So you see, if that one picture could have spread a little bit, it would have been a little easier for everybody concerned.
Well, might it not be possible for you now, on the heels of the success that your next picture, I'm sure, will attain, for you to make one picture each year in the year following, while this law has changed to...
Oh, I see what you mean. In other words, collect...
In other words, we'll root for you. Make a picture each year while this tax law is being changed.
Where can I telephone you both?
Well,
where can
I'll let
I write
you know.
To you? That's very kind. And there's another thing I've been wondering about. I mentioned it, and I think as a person grows older, man or woman, that they should be allowed a little more deductions, because after all, their capacity for working is a little lessened, I think, by years, although I hate to admit it. I think it is. I find I can't roller skate quite as good as I used to. Don't you think that should be taken into account?
But how would you handle
that? You're very silent, Mrs. Roosevelt. Now, I'd like to have you on my side.
I think Mrs. Roosevelt has good reason to disagree with you on that.
I do think there is a real point that has been raised about artists and writers and people who earn in chunks, so to speak. But I think we're coming to the end, and so now I would like to thank our radio audience for being with us today, our television audience, and tell them how much we enjoy having these wonderful guests with us, and thank all of our guests. They've been so kind. And I would also like to say that we're glad of all the suggestions that have come in.